Welcome to the Newsbusters podcast with the executive editor of Newsbusters, your host, Tim Graham.
Hello and welcome to the salty summer breeze at Newsbusters. CNN would no doubt describe us as a war on reporting, an assault on facts. This is, you know, you tune into CNN now and you get this tone. It's like even when you wake up in the early morning at 6 o'clock in the morning, assault on democracy, war on voting. This has been the constant messaging. It was certainly going all day yesterday. And so I tweeted, anyone who calls asking for an ID at the polls a war on voting would suggest asking for an ID at the airport is a war on flying. Asking for an ID at the bar is a war on drinking. Asking for an ID at Hertz, that's a war on driving. Asking for an ID to get a library card, a war on reading. This is the lingo we're getting now. It's gotta always be over the top. CNN is not facts first. It's all spin. And it just sounds like DNC TV. Last night, Nick Night Train Fonda Carroll won the jackpot. I told him I was going to joke about who would be the first numbskull to compare the anniversary of the Tulsa massacre of blacks to Republican voting bills. I was hoping I was not going to be right. But there it was. It was a Cuomo.
The party of Trump intensifying its efforts to strip people of color of their rights to vote. The boldest attempt since the era of Jim Crow.
You see, this is when you know people aren't serious when they drag out the Jim Crow baloney. And we understand the liberals don't think it's baloney because Biden can say it's Jim Crow on steroids, it's Jim Crow 2.0, and the fact checkers all shrug and say, fair enough. But it's bad enough to suggest that somehow changing the voting rules around the edges qualifies as segregated bathrooms, segregated drinking fountains, segregated neighborhoods, and a lynching here and there. But here we are. Chris Cuomo was suggesting that an alleged massacre of 300 black people is just like passing a voter rights bill or a voter integrity bill in Texas or Florida or Georgia. My immediate response was to tweet, this man isn't smart enough to operate an electric can opener.
You struggle, squeeze, and strain, but opening that can is a pain.
Ow!
Does anyone still use those? I mean, I don't, but...
Introducing Toucan, the new hands-free can opener.
Look, I know Chris Cuomo has a law degree, and he never lets you forget he has a law degree. But how on earth do you compare a white mob massacring hundreds of black people to passing a voter ID law or a law that tweaks early voting days and Dropbox rules? Hey, guys, why don't we just have one Sunday of voting instead of two? Mass murderer.
Oh, no, he didn't.
This is the sort of nonsense that you would think the fact checkers would get involved in, but that's kind of just what they let happen. Cuomo then just says,
are we just going to watch another mass attack on minorities unfold?
Yes. Chris is upset that the Democrats have a 50-50 Senate and can't just pass this For the People Act. The CNN is running this 24-7 panic that America's democracy is going to end if we don't pass the For the People Act that would federalize all the elections, take all the powers away from the states, and let the federal government run the elections. And what's comical about this is they hate the state voting laws and say, well, the state voting laws take all the rules away from the locals. I'm trying to understand your principles. But Chris Cuomo somehow thinks a massacre and a voter integrity bill are, in his words,
equally unholy and un-American.
They love using this word, un-American. Democrats are very, very free to call the Republicans un-American. You call a Democrat un-American, and apparently it's the return of McCarthyism. You're basically suggesting we're all Soviet communists. Well, what are you trying to say when we're un-American? And in the midst of all of this, you know, we've got CNN media unit specialist Oliver Darcy going on CNN trying to shame America with a study that claims 75% of Americans aren't good at identifying what's fake news. I don't know. If you look at CNN's ratings, it seems like a lot of Americans have figured out CNN has a lot of fake news. There are some facts in there somewhere, but it comes in between a blizzard of spin. Then I find this morning, after all the fun with Chris Cuomo, he wasn't quite the first CNN editorialist on this Tulsa line. In the morning, Poppy Harlow, yes, she wants to be taken seriously as a journalist, and call her Poppy. She said,
I keep thinking about this fight in Texas happening on, you know, the same day that we as a nation mark and recognize the massacre in Tulsa. And all of the civil rights and constitutional rights that the people of Tulsa, of Greenwood were stripped of over that 2 days. And what is happening now in terms of access to the ballot.
Sorry, Poppy. Of the civil rights and constitutional rights that they lost in Tulsa would include their lives. I just don't understand how these so-called smart people at CNN can't tell the difference between a murderer and somebody saying, can we not have the Dropbox open at 3 a.m? I mean, this really is one of those things where they don't care at all about cheating. They always say voter fraud is non-existent, that cheating is something that never happens. But they're not willing to create a regime that makes it less possible. These people don't even want you to strip the voter rolls of dead people. It's kind of confusing to me. If you're really for reforming the system, that's part of the reform. But I think, obviously, the Democrats feel that they're energizing their base has to be this Jim Crow baloney all the time. And CNN is nothing if they're not Democrat communications, DNC TV. And I'm not saying MSNBC is much better. But wow, you just turn on CNN today and they opened the show on New Day with Breonna Keeler saying, you know, Biden and Memorial Day decries the assault on democracy and we'll have more on how Biden's exactly right. Okay. And you were calling Fox state-run TV. By the way, on Memorial Day, the networks were shaming a Boston Celtics fan who threw a bottle of water at Brooklyn Nets star Kyrie Irving. I just thought this was interesting. It's not wrong to slam the water bottle thrower. CNN host John Berman said,
Boston Celtics fan arrested after throwing a water bottle that nearly hit Nets star Kyrie Irving in the head. Stupid.
Okay. The same CNN thought it was perfectly fine for Antifa to throw water bottles at their reporters and producers' heads. We had Miguel Marquez going out and saying,
I cannot blame them for being angry.
Somehow it's just not something that's stupid when they're throwing a bottle at the heads of journalists. NBC's Today also slammed sports fans for getting out of control. It's not right to throw a bottle at Kyrie Irving. Correct. Same NBC. In 2018, ignored their own reporter and crew being assaulted by Antifa. This is where you say journalists don't have any self-respect when they're getting attacked by the left. They get more upset at conservatives like us, gently criticizing them on the internet. I have never thrown a water bottle at anyone's head, certainly not a journalist. A friend of mine noted the Boston Globe said the city had a black eye over this anonymous bottle thrower. Well, this friend said even the Boston Globe reported last May, protesters threw glass bottles and frozen water bottles at Boston cops during the George Floyd protests.
Soup for my family.
Cops literally could get a black eye, and the Boston Globe didn't find this disturbing. Then he said to the Globe, have you forgotten the photo the Globe gleefully published a few years back of a bottle with a yellow liquid being thrown at the head of a Trump supporter? Differing rules. You can apparently, if you're on the right side of history, you can throw as many objects as you want. It can be frozen water. That's okay. It can be urine. That's okay, too, because it's not presumed to be racist. Throw a water bottle at an NBA star, probably racist. Makes them Boston have a black eye. Why can't we just have one unified single standard on civility and violence? Is that so hard? Apparently, it's very hard.
You're not planning on using that, are you, throwing it at the police?
Like I said, it's for my family.
Literally for your family. Yeah. All right.
We'll have more with Kyle Drennan after this.
MRC-store.com.
Pro-gun, pro-life, pro-God, and pro-America? Welcome to the Pro Shop.
MRC-store.com.
T-shirts, hoodies, goodies, and much more.
MRC-store.com.
The only store that always offers conservatives more.
That's MRC-store.com.
Log on, log in, and help the Media Research Center while shopping for great gear today.
MRC-store.com.
And we're back with Kyle Drennan, senior analyst since 2007. Goes way back.
Well, that's true.
Back to the George W. Bush years.
Yes. It's been several presidents now.
Isn't that something? Gosh. Yes. I accepted a job at the Media Research Center on the day of George H.W. Bush's inauguration. So, been here a while. We are focusing in on the, what do they call it? The severely restrictive Republican bills about voting. Your point you were making recently was about the state of Texas, where they're all running around saying restrictive, restrictive, restrictive.
Well, yes. I mean, according to the left-wing media, Texas is now the new ground zero. First it was Georgia, now it's Texas, of voter restrictions and, you know, Biden calls these bills un-American. That was a big line that they loved repeating yesterday as they were reporting on this Texas bill. But yeah, I mean, it's Democrats say this is all a bunch of un-American Jim Crow 2.0. So we're just here to repeat that in the media and not really challenge it. And just sort of, I mean, really, when they do actually, the reporters actually bother to sort of go down the list, are like, well, here are the provisions in the bill. It's all very reasonable, modest, you know, stuff. It's one of the big things was the early voting on Sundays will be moved to, the start time will be moved to 1 p.m.
Racist.
I mean, it's like, that's what we're all freaking out about. I mean, it's a little ridiculous.
Well, I think that's the beginning. Is you'd like to think that the news business would seriously say, here's what's in the bill. Do we get much of the Republican viewpoint on this? I mean, I somebody on Twitter, I think it was Comfortably Smug, was making fun that they had a graphic over Greg Abbott the other day saying Texas two-step. Oh, that's so insensitive. Greg Abbott can't take a step. He's in a wheelchair.
Maybe not the best headline. There's usually maybe a sentence or something of a Republicans say this is necessary, but it's all a lie and it's all, you know, and Democrats say it's all racist and it's going to take away people's ability to vote. I mean, it's a quick line from a, you know, it's not even really usually a Republican even saying the line. It's not even a soundbite of a Republican. It's usually, we're going to summarize what Republicans think, and then we're going to use that as a jumping off point to then trash it and say, but all of that is nonsense, and here's why. I mean, that's, yeah.
Yeah,
that's their idea of two sides.
Yeah, you're underlining. I find this interesting. Like, for example, I'll be in the car. And it used to be when under Trump, it would be NPR's news at the top of the hour would be like, and this happened under George W. Bush, too. It would be like, Bush said this today, or they wouldn't even say what Bush said. But then there'd be your mandatory soundbite of either an angry Democrat or an angry dissenting Republican. Right. And, you know, they're not going to feature a soundbite. A lot of times this happens that people should be aware of this when you watch TV, and that is, do the Republicans actually get a soundbite, or are they merely, their viewpoint is characterized by the reporter? Here's what they think, and it's all nonsense. And Yeah, so you would say, when you look at these stories, that the Democratic viewpoint's dominating the airtime while that story is on.
Right. And the way the stories are framed, I mean, Democrats are the heroes. I mean, all these stories yesterday on the networks were framed as Democrats are making their last stand in Texas. And, you know, the Democrats are vowing to fight on. I mean, this is the kind of language they're using. Like, the Democratic heroes are trying to stand up to the Republican villains. I mean, that's the narrative. It's always the narrative.
And then the legislators walked out in protest or whatever, so they couldn't pass the bill. And then Greg Abbott basically said, you know, I can suspend your pay if you're not going to come to work. And then the media was all like, you can't do that.
Right. And there was no suggestion of Democrats being, you know, petty or petulant or not doing their jobs or it being a stunt. I mean, there's none of that kind of language. All of that language, if it were Republicans, would absolutely be used. That's how they would frame it. But when Democrats do it, it's, oh, they're just heroically standing up for virtue and principles and values. And
what was the one? There was one a few years ago, and I think it was a John Lewis type thing, where the Democrats in Congress, in the House, they all sat down or kneeled down or what, they all sat on the floor or whatever.
It was like a sit-in kind of protest on like the House floor. Over
and they were all, yeah. Oh, this is glorious.
Right. I mean, it was just, yeah, there was, it's whenever Democrats do something that looks like just a shameless partisan stunt, it's always greeted as the most wonderful thing that reporters have ever seen.
Mr. President, what did you order?
Chocolate chip.
Well, this reminds me of some other things I sort of tried to remind myself. In Texas, 8 years ago, it was Wendy Davis,
yep,
who had this filibuster to stop a late-term abortion bill.
Right.
In her running shoes. She had pink running shoes. And our Matt Philbin found they gave the morning and evening shows gave that 41 minutes.
Yes.
Of time. I mean,
yes.
And glorious, you know, propaganda time.
Oh, yeah.
And she, of course, tried to run for governor in 2014 and fell flat on her face. So I guess the national media, they can do what they can. They try. Doesn't always work.
But then people vote.
Well, at least in Texas, that still seems to rebut them a little. Then it reminds me of 10 years ago, we talk about legislators walking out. This happened in Madison with Governor Scott Walker when he was trying to pass a bill to... The rudeness of him trying to make public employees pay for a fraction of their own health insurance. And this was treated like this horrible, horrible thing. And Diane Sawyer was comparing Scott Walker to the dictator in Egypt. You know, they were having protests at that moment in Egypt.
There was a Wisconsin spring or something.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, several media outlets were making this comparison to, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, leftist overtook the Capitol. Does that sound familiar? Mm-hmm. And back then it was glorious. It was righteous. You know, that right. was wonderful. And the legislators, the Democrats, if I remember correctly, took some cars and went right across the border to Rockford, which is like an hour to the south. They were like hiding out at the Best Western, you know.
Right.
But again, this is the kind of the glorious thing. And you had, we wrote at the time, Ed Schultz was talking about how Jesse Jackson was comparing this Wisconsin struggle to Rosa Parks,
yeah,
and the lynching of Emmett Till. I mean, this is where you just say, where do liberals get these analogies?
Yeah. Yeah, and where are the fact checkers on some of those analogies?
Yeah,
my gosh.
Well, I guess this is the whole point, is Democrats are allowed rhetorical excess.
Yes.
Because they're merely speaking with a flourish. They're not flourish checkers. Then you've also been working on Sinead O'Connor.
Yes.
Sinead O'Connor being honored by the Today Show. I had said Sinead has a great publicist, because here she is. She had one hit record in 1990, and it wasn't even her own song. It was her cover of a Prince song.
Right.
But gosh, she shaved her head and she's so pretty. And they're still dragging this out. So I guess she has a new memoir.
Yes, she has a new memoir out, and I guess she's going to start going on tour again and doing some more, you know, albums or whatever. And so, you know, as part of the whole rollout of this, she sat down with Carson Daly for the Today Show, and it was really kind of bizarre. I mean, it was just another one of these, we're going to rehabilitate this radical leftist who did something horribly offensive. In her case, it was, she was on Saturday Night Live in 1992. She was the musical guest. And then at the end of her song, she tore up a picture of Pope John Paul II and said, "Fight the real enemy," which I guess meant the Pope and the Catholic Church. And that wrecked her career. I mean, people really, you know.
Well, you know, Kyle, we could say there's lots of people who are one-hit wonders. I mean, Do we really know? I mean, but this is, it reminds me of the Dixie Chicks, is that these people,
right?
If you do something that's considered, you know, a courageous protest. I mean, the Dixie Chicks did something less offensive. They basically said they weren't proud of Bush. They didn't rip up a picture of Bush.
No.
I mean, this is taking a picture of the Pope of millions and millions of Catholics worldwide and ripping it into pieces and saying that the Catholic Church is the real enemy.
Right.
That's millions and millions of Americans. And somehow this is a heroic gesture of protest.
Yeah. So the Today Show sort of, you know, reminded viewers of this incident. And then it turned into, Sinead O'Connor thinks that was a blessing. That was a blessing rip up a picture of the Pope.
Okay.
And it was an awakening for her. I mean, these are the and then Carson Daly's asking these softball questions of.
The perception was that Pope moment on SNL 92 sort of derailed your career. Whereas your take on it, which I thought was interesting, was that's quite the opposite. It was at that moment that you felt like you were re-railing your career.
I mean, these were the kinds of like, here, let me help you explain away this horribly offensive thing that you did, and let's turn it into a positive. You were actually doing some great thing. It was all, it actually was wonderful for your career and everything.
Okay.
I mean, it's just the idea that you're sort of like, you know, digging up, a washed up singer like Sinead O'Connor. It's like, well, she's got a memoir out. We've got to help rehabilitate her. And, you know,
this is not the first time they've done this. I mean, every time she's got a new record, that's an old term, but anytime she has new music or is touring somewhere, they pull this stuff out. And so, yeah, Mrs. Graham, I laughed at her this morning because we started squabbling about this a little bit. She had seen it yesterday. I was listening to it in the other room, just going, what is this? And this is why people say, oh, do you listen to Tim's podcast? And she's like, no, I get it at home. And she did this morning because she said, well, she explained that her mother had this picture in her room. So this was really about her mother, her abusive mother. It wasn't about the Pope. I said, it doesn't matter. No. If somebody was like, well, my dad had a picture of Martin Luther King, so I ripped up Martin Luther King on national TV. Is that gonna wash?
I don't think the Today Show would be like, well, let's get into the full context of why you ripped up that picture. But that's what Carson Daly did here. He sort of played like, you know, amateur psychiatrist. It's like, well, now this may have not really been about the Pope, right? Because your mom, this was your mom's picture, and so maybe it was really you and your mom, and like, it turned into this like, you know, therapy session of like, I'm going to help you kind of, you know, excuse this away, explain this away. And then, of course, and this is all part of this recent phenomenon where you have this leftist woke cancel culture, but the media ignore that, you know, when this leftist woke cancel culture goes after conservatives or just goes after, you know, anyone they don't like, they ignore that. And instead, what they're trying to do now is sort of say, like the Dixie Chicks, oh, they were victims of cancel culture.
Yeah.
Sinead O'Connor, I mean, Carson Daly asked,
do you think you were the first one sort of canceled?
I mean, it's suddenly liberals that they like. Ellen DeGeneres was just had a softball interview on the Today Show where Savannah Guthrie was like, do you feel like people are trying to cancel you now because accusations came out of a toxic work environment? So it's liberals that they like are suddenly they're the victims of cancel culture, not everyone else who's been on the receiving end, but just, you know, they're people that they like.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it makes more sense if it's somebody like Ellen DeGeneres who has a show And somebody's trying to cancel. I don't know if anybody in particular is trying to cancel the show. I don't think anybody, everybody presumed she was too powerful that you would cancel her show. What came out was it kind of leaked out over time, over a period of years, that she portrayed herself as Miss Nicey Nice, and she was nothing like that in real life.
Right. Right. And ultimately, I mean, her show obviously came back for a season, and now she's saying next season's going to be her last season. So, yeah, I mean, she sort of made that decision. But, yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, we're only going to be interested in quote-unquote cancel culture if it's liberals being canceled, you know, for some reason, you know, that we think is unfair. But conservatives or anybody else being canceled, well, you know, we're not, we don't talk about that. That's not important to them.
They are, yeah, those are not our darlings. And so, yeah, Sinead O'Connor, who now says she's a Muslim, it's like, oh, and I suppose if you ripped up a depiction of Muhammad on Saturday Night Live, that would be okay?
Yeah, they would not be doing a rehab segment.
I mean, this in a weird way, though, Kyle, is I always come back to this and go, oh, okay, here's what's really going on. NBC is kind of glorifying itself about what a titanic show Saturday Night Live is, and they're still sort of covering for themselves like, oh,
yeah. There's definitely an element of that where it's like, this happened on Saturday Night Live, but let's go back and like explain what really happened.
It's sort of like after Kanye West said George Bush doesn't like black people on the NBC telethon, and then NBC tried to help themselves by recreating it as a skit on Saturday Night Live.
Right, right. Yeah, exactly.
So finally, I was focusing on Hunter Biden this week in the column, and it's fascinating to me. You know, the New York Post comes out with a story. We obviously remember last fall when the New York Post had a set of stories that Hunter Biden had a laptop. And Bill D'Agostino made a video of all the times that the networks and the cable networks tried to say that it's got all the hallmarks of Russian disinformation. And now there's a new story where they're talking about, here's a photo of Joe and Hunter and a bunch of people who are Hunter's clients in Kazakhstan. They're still ignoring it. But what really struck me as I was looking around in the, well, how is Hunter Biden mentioned? Jake Tapper has on this Edward Isaac Dover on, who's got a new book. And he goes, credit to Tapper. He said,
I have to say, one of the most shocking stories that you break in this, and it's full of scoops, but one of the most shocking one is about Biden's son, Hunter. You reveal in the summer of 2019, so his dad is running for president, he's actually pitching a reality show about himself to producers. And you say, quote, if Beau Biden didn't need Joe, that's his late son, Hunter had spent his life trading on his father's name.
How does that not become a news story?
I think Hunter Biden's life is a reality show at this point.
Yeah.
I don't think you need to produce anything.
Just follow him around with the camera?
Yeah, just follow him around with the camera. I mean, yeah, it's the effort, the lengths with which they went to hide Hunter Biden and everything that was going on with him during the campaign. It's just like, I mean, you know, and then compare that to, you know, how they were covering Trump and all the Trump family members and kids and everything.
Oh, that's why this one just amazes me, because how many times did they talk about how we have this reality show president and he put his own kids on it? Ivanka was the star of the show.
Right.
And now, you know, here's Hunter Biden saying, let's make the Coke Prentice or whatever. I mean, and they kind of said to Isaac Dover, they were like, what was the concept that he was pitching? And it's like, yeah, it didn't really go anywhere. But even then, Dover's making the point. He was trying to make the point that Beau Biden tried to not make a career off his name. Although clearly, I mean, Beau Biden wanted to run for governor of Delaware. He had big plans.
Yeah.
Hunter Biden, he said, Hunter Biden's always been trading on his name. And I think that should be quite obvious to anybody. Mm-hmm. But this is the story they're always going to squash.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's one of these things, like, if the media want to play this, you know, sort of have this standard of, oh, well, the family members, you know, are really kind of off limits, like, we don't want to get personal. Well, it's like, well, you go after family members of Republicans all the time. So it's like, what is the standard here? It's well, family members are off limits, unless you're a Republican and we hate you, then your family, we're going to trash them. But, you know, if you're a Democrat and we like you and we're trying to get you elected, then your family's off limits. Like, that's their standard.
It reminds me that Saturday Night Live, I think, had a skit about Ivanka Trump where she had a new perfume called Complicit. Somehow Joe Biden's never complicit in all these Hunter Biden emails where he says, and give a share to the big guy. Oh, we're not interested in that.
Right.
It's almost Kyle, like Kyle is an enthusiast of WeatherTech. It's like the media like covers Hunter Biden in WeatherTech. You can't possibly soil him because it's got clearly protected.
You just take him out, you hose him off. Good as new. That's
right. I just think it's amazing. I would recommend to anybody again that the Daily Mail had a collection of photos and stuff off Hunter's laptop where he had like very scary teeth. He obviously has a whole bunch of caps on his teeth now. There's so many things that they don't want you to know. And look, part of what our job at Newsbusters, the conservative news media in general, they don't recognize us as real journalists or real media critics, but we're here to bring you what they don't want to talk about, which are real facts, but they're facts that they're not interested in because they're not facts first, they're spin first. So that's right. Why you come to Newsbusters once, twice, 24 times a day. Thanks for listening.